Hey guys, Bill here. Welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. And before we get into today's episode, first, I want to remind everyone to make sure you're staying up to date on all your fantasy football news with ESPN's fantasy experts, Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Mike Clay, who happens to be a guest on this very show in a couple minutes, and Daniel Zopp on the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You'll get daily strategy, previews, and injury reports to ensure you have all the information you'll need for your fantasy football team. Download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football and The Bill Barnwell Show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, we'll be getting to Mike and talking about the fantasy draft board he's put together for the upcoming season in a minute. But first, wanted to say, this podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jet's Pizza location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, here's Mike Clay. And now, joining me as promised, a man who is in high demand this time of year as we get started and are into the full swing, actually, of fantasy football drafts. It is the guru of fantasy football here at ESPN. One of the best and most accurate prognosticators in the industry. Excellent, excellent guest. Someone we love having on the show is Mike Clay. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing better after that introduction. I appreciate it, Bill. Always love coming on the show, but I always like the words in the introduction too, because you're certainly the class of the field when it comes to NFL analysis. So really appreciate that.
Well, see, this is so nice. This is such a nice, wonderful experience. Yesterday, had Mina Kimes in the show, antagonistic, huge ego, meant no. That is not you. No, obviously. Psyched to have Mina on the show yesterday. Psyched to have you on the show today. We have some really interesting stuff to talk about. You, every year, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you write your ultimate draft board, which is basically just you coming up with a way to attack your typical fantasy draft. And we're going to get into that today, kind of go round by round through the first few rounds of your ultimate draft board and just sort of get a sense of what you're thinking, what your goals are, maybe some questions related to, sort of how you might structure a draft. What if this happens? What if that happens? And then related to a expert league that you're in, the Apex League, which can you explain the Apex League to the uninitiated?
Yeah, so it's essentially an experts league, if you will. Basically you can join these leagues for a few bucks and participating in public leagues if you would like. But Mike Broad, who runs these leagues, kind of puts this one league together. We all jump in and compete against each other, and it's really a lot of fun. So you would recognize a lot of the names that are in this one. You know, Evan Silva, J.J. Zacharyson and Matt Harmon, Grant Barfield, Sigmund Bloom, Brodo Pat from Roto World, the list goes on. So Sean Siegel, who's terrific as well. So it's a really good group. It's always super competitive. I was lucky enough to win it twice. I still don't know how I pulled that off, because it's just an crazy competitive league. Basically, either win it or finish in like ninth place, because it's just so you have to take some chances, right? And it's like, as we'll get to when we talk about it a little bit, it's like my board just gets cleared off every time, right? I'm not used to that. I'm used to finding values at every pick, and my targets are usually available when I expect them to be, my value picks. But there is no value in this league because everybody's just scooping up all the good players.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, obviously, You know, your typical home league, if you're someone listening, is probably not going to be as intense. It's probably going to be some more value opportunities than there is in this sort of league. So I think we're going to talk about, you know, kind of the structure of what you wrote about for your typical draft, and maybe relate it to a more expert league and see, you know, where the differences are and what kind of stands out and where you might reach for someone or not reach for someone. So let's start with the simplest part. We'll get to round one. And obviously, your advice here is pretty simple. Take the best running back available, whether it's Christian McCaffrey at 1-1, whether it is, you know, going through Saquon Barkley, Zeke Elliott, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, all through the first round, you're generally going to be taking a running back. So a couple questions for you here. In terms of your first round picks, obviously depends on where you end up with the draft slot. But in a typical league, let's say half PPR, we'll just use that as kind of our baseline. Are you willing to consider any non-running backs in the first round of a typical draft?
Well, I mean, kind of what I write about here is that you can, and I use this line right off the bat, is that you can have your cake and eat it too, right? So the reason why I want to attack running back early is because wide receiver is just ridiculously deep. I mean, you're going to be looking at, in round three, potentially a guy that's top 10 on your board, and you could potentially draft three top 25 receivers and still have started with the running back in the first round, and maybe, depending on the size of the league, even round two. So I'm willing to go the Michael Thomas route because, you know, he was just absolutely exceptional last season, and I don't think much is going to change with Drew Brees back in that offense. You know, he's still the clear guy there, and he dominated the wide receiver position last year by a ton of points. So actually 99 to be exact. So Thomas is a guy I start thinking about in the mid to late stages of the first round, but in a perfect world, I'm getting one of those top five wide running backs, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Zeke Elliott, Alvin Kamara, or Dalvin Cook. I mean, in a perfect world, I want one of them.
Yes, of course. Now, in a non-perfect world, if you're drafting in that sort of no man's land towards the bottom half of the first round, a guy who's rapidly rising up draft boards since the Damian Williams news is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I'm sure you've talked about this a bunch on the Fantasy Focus podcast. But in terms of your range for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Lewis Riddick, our colleague, said he would take Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the first pick of a fantasy draft. Now, I'm guessing you would prefer Christian McCaffrey, and I would as well. But how high are you willing to take Clyde in a typical draft?
Well, he's seventh on my board at running back. So you mix in, say, Michael Thomas, maybe Devontae Adams, that puts Edwards-Helaire just inside the top 10. So I have him ninth overall on my board. So I'm not going much crazier than that. You know, I think that he's in a terrific position to be the clear lead back in this Andy Reid / Patrick Mahomes offense. And could he, as a rookie, lead the running back position in fantasy points? I mean, it's possible. I think it's probably a stretch because I don't know that he's going to get the carries needed, right? And remember, he's not huge, right? He's 5'7", 207. You know, he's a little undersized. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He is going to be heavily involved as a pass catcher. He will score lots of touchdowns if he's out there on the field in this offense. There really are a lot to like. But, and again, he was my number one running back before the draft, which was very controversial at that point. So I like the guy. I love the talent. I love the elusiveness. I love the tackle breaking. Love the receiving ability. But he might not be good. You know, we don't know that for sure, right? He hasn't played in the NFL yet. You have to hedge your bets a little bit in the first round. You know, so the draft goes deeper, you can take more chances. But in the first round with the first overall pick in the top five, you have to be a little bit more conservative. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm happy to take one of those other five superstar running backs before I take that chance on a rookie.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, there's been examples of great teams. You know, look at the Patriots, who took Sony Michel. And Sony Michel, of course, was great in the playoffs a couple of years ago and then was a dud last year for a guy who was taken at the end of the first round in kind of a similar spot. Lawrence Maroney, of course, years ago showed some promise, but ended up being a disappointment. So even the best end up can take players who don't turn out to be significantly impactful players at running back at the end of the first round. In the Apex draft here, so this is a full PPR league, one quarterback, two running backs, three wideouts, a flex, kicker, and defense. You had the 12 slots, so you're picking 12, 13 on the turn. You took Nick Chubb with the 12th overall pick. What led you to Chubb?
Yeah, and by the way, Edwards-Helaire, eighth in that draft as well. So he was already off the board, as were the big five, Derrick Henry and Miles Sanders. So, again, my thinking is I want to get at least one running back, you know, with my first two picks. And then, you know, generally I'm going to lean towards two of them if I can, if there's something I like on the board. So Chubb, I was more excited for him going into last season when we knew Kareem Hunt was going to miss half the season. Now I think it's going to be both of them pretty involved. We saw Chubb kind of fall to front end RB2 status once Hunt came back because, you know, he mixed in the carry department, but he really got a lot of work as a pass catcher and vice versa for Chubb, whose passing work went down. So that bothers me a little bit, but at the same time, we're talking about a guy who's top two in yards per carry and yards after contact since he entered the NFL. And the Browns offense kind of suppressed a little bit last year, I think, by coaching, but also by schedule, right? They had a very tough schedule for that offense. Now you bring in Kevin Stefanski, the schedule will be a bit lighter this year, and it should be all systems go. So Chubb, I just think, is one of the best rushers in the NFL. I'll gladly take him at the 12th spot.
Yeah, and I think just a guy who – you know, we saw it, Dalvin Cook. The Vikings had talent at receiver. They had a quarterback they paid a lot of money to. They ran the ball a ton last year. And you know, I mean, I think when you're Kevin Stefanski, you're thinking about rebuilding that offense, you know, and sort of taking the load off of Baker Mayfield, it wouldn't shock me if they were going to go run heavy. And some of that's going to be dictated by situation and score. But I think overall, they want to be a team that runs the ball a lot. And so, you know, there might be enough for Chubb and Hunt to go around where they could both have pretty significant roles.
Right, no doubt. And, you know, last year, Kevin Stefanski, at least in the as the modern era goes, was near the basement in terms of three wide receiver sets, right? He was down near 20% because he had a lot of multiple tight end sets with Rudolph and Irv Smith, something that Cleveland can do now since they signed Austin Hooper to go with David Njoku, not to mention they bring in Andy Janovich at the fullback position. But Minnesota, you know, they didn't have a good third receiver, right? I mean, when Adam Thielen was hurt, they really didn't have a good number two wide receiver. It was Busy Johnson. So you look at the Cleveland roster and you see the same thing, right? You saw their offseason spent on getting Janovich, getting Austin Hooper, you know, committing to Chubb and Hunt at the running back position. They are built around heavy personnel packages. And I say all that because you're going to see a lot of Chubb and Hunt on the field together. And that's something I usually push back on. A lot of people say, well, they have two good running backs. You're going to see a lot of two running back sets. And it doesn't happen. Teams don't really do that. They prefer to have a third receiver on the field. I think that Stefanski has shown he can and will be the exception, and that's good news for Chubb as well as Kareem Hunt.
Absolutely. Now, round two, your advice here, basically lean towards a second running back. You list some options, Kenyon Drake, Josh Jacobs, Aaron Jones, Austin Eckler. Is this pretty common for you year to year, or do you think that because of that depth at wide receiver, it's better to go running back with your first two picks this year?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, this when I was writing this, this is one of the spots where I battled with myself, right? Because on one hand, you know, there's some pretty good options here at running back, right? Kenyon Drake, Josh Jacobs, Aaron Jones, Austin Eckler, you know, those are perfectly formidable running back options. However, you basically have all but maybe two of the top wide receivers, and you also have Travis Kelce and George Kittle as options here. I mean, you have some absolute superstars that you could take over, say, mid to back end RB1 options. So which way do you go? And for me, what I wrote about here is that, you know, sometimes if I like the running back, I feel good about him, like a Kenyon Drake. Maybe if I'm picking early in the second round, I'll go that direction, right? I'll take that player because I feel pretty good about him. But if I don't do that and I take a wide receiver, you know, and that could be the Tyreek Hill or Julio, or maybe it's the middle of the round, I go Kelce or Kittle, something like that. I'm probably throwing running back away, that running back two slot away, right? Because as we're going to get to, the next few rounds are just going to be overwhelming with wide receiver options, and the running back options aren't that great. So this is a key spot. You know, it should really determine, you know, your draft strategy shouldn't really be dictated too much by your round two pick, you wouldn't think. But I think the way that drafts are structured this year, that's going to be a big deal for you. If you start running back, you know, you're going to be attacking that wide receiver position pretty heavily in the middle rounds. And if you go running back receiver, you're probably still going to do that just because of the guys that are available.
Yeah, of course. Is there a running back in this group in the second round where once he's gone, he's sort of like the last resort for running back, where then you think, okay, I am going to go with one of those wide receivers or one of those top two tight ends?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think the answer is yes. I think at running back this year, there are 14 running backs that I feel comfortable with, right? We talked about the big five at the top. We talked about Henry and Edwards-Helaire. And then it's last names only: Sanders, Drake, Chubb, Jones, Eckler, Mixon, and Jacobs, right? Those are the 14. After that, you get into some big question marks with Chris Carson and Leonard Fournette and the older guys, Gurley, Johnson, and Bell, and Melvin Gordon, James Conner, you know, Those guys all are getting either older or coming off really poor efficiency seasons. They have injury questions. They change teams. There's a lot of question marks there in that next tier. So if I can get two of the top 14 with my first two picks, I'm feeling pretty good about it. If not, and again, if you're picking in the mid to late stages of round two, you may not, you know, none of those 14 may get to you, then I'm going to pivot to another position.
In terms of what you're thinking with that second running back slot, if you can't get one of those top 14 guys, are you more likely to, you know, take a wide receiver or a tight end and then in the third or fourth round look for a running back? Or are you basically at that point saying, I'm going to punt this position, I will worry about that second running back slot if I can find someone who, you know, whose value drops and I get someone great, but otherwise I'm thinking I'm going to basically hit that position 5 or 6 rounds from now? Which of those two options do you think is more likely if you don't get two of those top 14 guys?
Yeah, definitely punting the second slot, and that's okay, right? Your starting lineup's not going to be perfect by the, if you're drafting with other smart players, right? So that's okay to do. You're going to have a lot of options in the mid to late rounds on flyers, on backup running backs with high ceilings. If the starter gets hurt, there's, you know, PPR stars, maybe a guy that could catch 60, 70, 80 footballs like a Tariq Cohen. Rookies, obviously, second year potential post-hype breakouts. There's a ton of options there. There's going to be injuries. You're going to be able to find a second running back. So I'm okay with that. I'll just throw it away. Unless somebody falls that I like, I'll pretty much be focusing on wide receiver for the next few rounds. And as we'll get to in detail, there's a pretty clear reason why, and it's because the position is just crazy deep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many good wideouts available in these rounds. In the Apex draft, you pick 13th. So you have the first pick of the second round, and you chose Kenyon Drake, a guy who it seems like you're pretty high on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always liked him. I liked him coming into the league, and we kind of saw him suppressed in the Adam Gase offense for a while, which can be applied to, I mean, the list is getting pretty lengthy now of players who did not perform in the Gase offense and went on to bigger and better things once they got out of there. But Drake, you know, he arrived there in Arizona last season, played just under 80% of their offensive snaps, was around 20 touches a game. And he was the number four scoring fantasy running back during that stretch. And they gave him the transition tag. I mean, who does that for a running back, you know? So that's a pretty clear commitment to me that he's going to be the feature back. Chase Edmonds is back. He was his clear backup last year. The only other investment was the 7th round pick and Eno Benjamin, right? Like, he's not a real threat. So it's the Drake show in an Arizona offense. It should be even better this season.
Yeah. I mean, I like Edmonds as sort of like a flyer in the later rounds. But I think Kenyon Drake does have a clear path to some pretty, pretty significant upside, a really productive player, like you said, once he got to Arizona a year ago. Get to the 3rd round, unsurprisingly, given what we've been talking about. You go running back with the first two picks. You're going to be taking a wide receiver most likely in round 3. The guy you're suggesting in your column, and I want to ask you why you chose him specifically, is Mike Evans of the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I want him here because I can't believe he gets here, right? I mean, the guy has been money in fantasy throughout most of his career. His touchdowns have been kind of all over the place. But, you know, if he finishes as a top 10 receiver in fantasy points per game this season, that'll be 4 of the past 5 seasons. And, you know, because of the quarterback change and because of the aforementioned depth at wide receiver, not to mention people are hammering running backs in the first two rounds, Evans is falling to the 3rd. I've managed to get him there several times, and it's not always going to happen, right? Sometimes he's going to go in the 2nd. You won't be able to get him here, but he's a guy I've got enough there that he is on my radar. That's a guy that I would love to get. And this is 12 teamers, right? So 10 teamers, you have an even better chance to get him in the 3rd round. But, you know, he's not the only guy too. If he gets picked, basically you're looking at running backs like Melvin Gordon, Gurley, Connor, Chris Carson, who I mentioned earlier, or how about these wide receivers, Allen Robinson, DJ Moore, OBJ, Cooper, maybe Kenny Golladay if he falls and Evans doesn't. I mean, is there any question that the receivers are overwhelmingly better and more reliable than your running back options here? That's why I want to go that direction here.
Absolutely. Makes total sense. In terms of Evans, I think he's really interesting. I want to know what you think about his situation, because obviously on paper, you sit here and say, hey, Tom Brady is a great quarterback. It's, you know, even though he's older, getting Tom Brady in there is probably going to be good for the offense. But then, you know, I think about the possessions last year. The Bucs led the league in possessions. They had extremely large air yard totals because it was Jameis Winston at quarterback. There were a lot of shots, a lot of possessions, a lot of throws downfield. And you'd figure with Tom Brady, it's going to be fewer possessions, fewer shots downfield. Tom Brady's not going to be checking down all game, but fewer shots downfield, and maybe a different sort of offense. Are you concerned that there might not be just as many opportunities to go around for the entire Tampa passing offense relative to what we saw in years past?
Not really. I think it'll be a high volume offense because that's what we've seen from Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich so far, including last season. And as for getting the ball vertical downfield, I mean, Bruce Arians has moved around the league quite a bit, right? From Pittsburgh to Indy to Arizona to Tampa Bay. His past 10 offenses, all 10 of them have been top 10 in average depth of throw. 8 of them were top 4. I mean, it doesn't matter where he goes. It doesn't matter who his quarterback is. He goes vertical with the football. I don't think that changes with Tom Brady there. Now, is it maybe if they finish 9th instead of 3rd with Brady instead of Winston? Maybe, you know, that's certainly a possibility. But I'm not worried about them not featuring Mike Evans, right? I don't think his targets are going to plummet by any means. He's still going to be a vertical threat. He's still one of the best talents in the league. He's still one of the only receivers in the NFL at 6'5 or bigger, right? So he's going to be a threat near the goal line. He's near the top of the NFL in end zone targets. Actually, I believe he's number 1 in end zone targets since he was drafted. So not worried about Mike Evans at all. And I'm certainly pretty excited about this Buccaneers offense overall.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your piece here that you have Jonathan Taylor as an overvalued rookie. What makes you say that?
The situation, right? So I like the Colts offense overall. I like the trajectory of that team. I think they're going to win that division this year. But, you know, the run blocking is going to be terrific. The offense should be better and score more. But you have a lot of backs. And they're right there. They're still saying Marlon Mack is their lead back. And I think Taylor will out-carry him this season. I think he'll prove to be the better back. But, you know, Mack's been a pretty effective rusher as well. I don't think he's going to completely disappear. And if he gets 7 carries a game, we'll say, that's 7 carries not going to Jonathan Taylor. Mm-hmm. And another problem is that Taylor is not going to be featured in passing situations. They have Nyheim Hines. They like him, and he's going to be very involved in that area as well. Not to mention that Taylor's a day 2 draft pick, and historically, at least over the past decade, day 2 running backs have not been good in fantasy. The hit rate is extremely low. So there's a lot of things kind of working against him, but I think overall volume is the big issue for me. I mean, I don't dislike him. I think he's going to be a terrific player in this league, but probably more like a 5th rounder, not a 3rd rounder, which is just a little too much for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he seems to be going pretty high. At the end of the 3rd round in the Apex draft, you took Cortland Sutton, another guy who I feel like very interesting because you can sit here and say he really broke out last year, very impressive. I think even better than his numbers on a play-by-play basis, watching him play with Drew Lock last year. But, of course, we don't know how good Drew Lock is. The Broncos added KJ Hamler, Jerry Jeudy, Melvin Gordon this offseason. So a lot of, you know, pieces coming in the offense who would expect targets. How do you sort of mitigate all that? What do you feel like Sutton's upside is this year given that situation?
Yeah, I mean, he was wide receiver 19 last season, right? And so I agree with you. I think there's room for more. I think there's room for more touchdowns. I mean, you know, the targets, I think, will probably be about the same. I think they'll throw the ball a little bit more. Mm-hmm. His target share might go down a tiny bit with Jerry Jeudy there and KJ Hamler there, Noah Fant in his next season. But,
yeah,
you know, this guy really is the limit. I really believe in Sutton's talent. He was terrific after the catch last season, a little unlucky in the touchdown department. You know, 6th in the NFL in end zone targets since he was drafted a couple years ago. And by the way, maybe this offense completely breaks out. I mean, the Broncos could be the breakout team of the year, right? If the defense is outstanding, I think it's top 5 on paper. They had all these weapons in the draft and free agency. The offensive line is in pretty good shape, even with Juwan James opting out. And if Drew Lock, it really comes down to Drew Lock. I think he's one of the biggest wild cards in the NFL this season. If he's solid or better, you know, the Broncos should be outstanding. They could easily win double digit games.
Yeah. And even if they aren't a great team, I mean, you can still have a really productive season if it's the right situation. I think about Allen Robinson, you know, a guy who, you know, was 4th in, was a wide receiver 4 in his second season in the league with Blake Bortles, who, I'm not going to lie, Drew Lock gives me some kind of Blake Bortles vibes, you know, the size, the athleticism, the ability to make big plays, maybe not all that great of a player in the long run, but a guy who might be better for fantasy purposes than he would be for real life purposes. And, you know, I think Sutton has that kind of upside if things break right. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's, you can ask questions, you know, same way with Evans, but I do think the talent and the size and the athleticism and the opportunity should all be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in on the Broncos, right? I'm on the bandwagon. We always have our bandwagon teams every year, but I'm in. But again, if it just comes down to Locke too. You know, he does.
Of course.
Yeah. You know what? You know what I was thinking about was, I think Bortles is an excellent example, right? He was competent behind a really good defense that year, right? He was kind of protected by that defense. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we saw a couple years ago, Chicago, which Vic Fangio was the defensive coordinator at that time. Mm-hmm. We saw an elite defense protect Mitch Trubisky. And I feel like Denver is in the similar position, right? Mm-hmm. You know, with their personnel moves, and Fangio's the head coach there now. And, you know, maybe that defense has a breakout and is elite. It was already really good last year. Could be even better this year. You know, they need Fant to kind of be that Bortles / Trubisky. And by the way, if he's better than that, you know, look out for the Broncos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So in the fourth round, you are suggesting Adam Thielen, a guy who I'm also very high on this year. Are you pretty much exclusively wide receiver in the fourth round?
Absolutely. In fact, I wrote my column that if you don't take a fourth round wide receiver this year, you're doing it wrong, right? It's it's going to be hard to go another direction. You have Adam Thielen, who I think is a top 10 fantasy receiver, who's available this late. Juju Smith-Schuster is an option. Calvin Ridley, Cooper Kupp, who was a top 5 fantasy receiver last year, AJ Brown, Robert Woods. We just talked about Cortland Sutton. Amari Cooper has a late third round ADP, so he falls to the fourth sometimes. I mean, those are your receivers. And again, it's very similar to round three. Here's your running backs: Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Devin Singletary, David Montgomery, DeAndre Swift. I mean, come on, it's not even a close call.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Fundamentally, like, you know, I think one of those running backs will probably have a good season, but your chances of picking the right guy aren't very high.
Yeah, and look, they're fine. You know, if they fall a little bit, and you're exactly right. If several of them might be top 20 running backs, but it's just not close to the reliability, the high floors, and even the high ceilings of mm-hmm. your wide receiver options.
Yeah, I find it interesting because, you know, Thielen obviously was hurt last year, did miss a chunk of time. The Vikings are a team that do want to run the football, but you would figure, given that they traded Stephon Diggs, that his target share opportunity should be really significant, just given that there's not, you know, Justin Jefferson will get some touches, but he's not going to get a Stephon Diggs level workload.
No question about it. I mean, look, in 2017 and 2018, he was a top 10 fantasy wide receiver. Last year, before he got injured in week 7, he sat 9th, right? So, I mean, that's 3 straight seasons, basically, he's been a top 10 fantasy receiver, and you don't have to pay that cost at this point. You know, he's still right around age 30. Like you said, the sky's the limit in terms of targets here, because, you know, you have a rookie, Justin Jefferson, as a 2. They pretty much did not address that third spot. I mean, maybe Tajay Sharpe can make some noise there. You have the 2 tight ends. And of course, you have Dalvin Cook in the backfield. Maybe, you know, if he plays, we'll see if he ends up holding out. So there's not an overwhelming number of mouths to feed. And you're right, it is a low volume pass offense, but Thielen should be good to go in terms of at least a quarter of the targets in this offense.
An offense that does have a lot of mouths to feed, or at least one really significant mouth to feed, is Atlanta. And in the Apex draft, at 401 with Adam Thielen off the board, you took Calvin Ridley. And so I guess my question for you is, what do you think Calvin Ridley's ceiling is with Julio Jones in this offense?
I think it's pretty high. You know, we saw Tampa Bay in that division have 2 top 10 fantasy wide receivers last season. They would have had 2 top 5 if not for the injuries. And I think Atlanta can do that. I mean, last season, Ridley was 14th in fantasy points before his season-ending injury. That was in week 14. So, and that was with Austin Hooper, by the way. He missed a few weeks in there, but Austin Hooper was the number one scoring fantasy tight end before he went down with an injury. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Ridley, Jones, it was Ridley, Jones, and Hooper, basically, and, you know, of course, Freeman. And then you had kind of Sanu and Russell Gage in the slot. And it's a very similar dynamic, right? You sub in Gurley for Freeman. Mm-hmm. Sanu's gone, so Gage is the slot man now, and you have Hayden Hurst in for Hooper, but it's still Dirk Cutter. It's still Matt Ryan. I mean, it should be a very similar dynamic here. But I'll be totally honest with you, Bill. I was completely shocked to get Ridley because the hype has been out of control for him, and he still fell to me somehow. I was kind of surprised. I guess it was just the right place at the right time. I haven't got him much because the hype is so out of control. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, saying he's this year's Chris Godwin and talking about him as, you know, maybe passes out Julio Jones, which I think is a stretch, but this is a very pass heavy offense. They're going to score a lot of points. The talent's there. It's Ridley's third year. I'm comfortable with him as my number 2 receiver.
Yeah. How high would you be willing to take Ridley in this sort of draft? I mean, is he a guy at the top of the third round, middle of third round? Where is his like sort of like the first spot you're willing to consider him?
Yeah, that's fair. I think this is about the spot. So he's my 17th wide receiver, and in my overall board, I have him at 41. So this is, I don't even know where I took him in this one, what the number was, but it might have been based on the flow of the draft a little bit earlier than this. But yeah, 37. So yeah, four spots off. That's about right.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty reasonable. I mean, obviously, you know, a guy who I think is still incredibly young, still opportunity for him to break out. And, you know, even if he doesn't, even if he's just the guy he was a year ago, that guy was still pretty effective. So, you know, I think a pretty high floor and a high ceiling as well for Calvin Ridley in the fourth round there. Round five, you are thinking about another receiver. You have a couple options here, and you actually get to the tight end position, which I want to talk about. You list Zach Ertz or Tyler Lockett as your two options in round five. Why?
Yeah, well, let's start with Ertz because he's a guy on my radar in every draft, and I'm surprised how undervalued he's become. I mean, talk about money at the tight end position. Mm-hmm. Four straight seasons, he has been top four in targets, receptions, yards, and fantasy points. I mean, talk about a super high floor from your tight end. And remember, last season, he put together a top five season, and that was with that point in the season, remember toward the middle part of the season where he wasn't really producing because he was being double and triple covered because of all the wide receiver injuries. And the injuries just got worse, but Doug Peterson adjusted, Carson Wentz adjusted, and he ended up flourishing down the stretch. He, you know, they got him open, they got him the football, and he had a huge second half of the season. So I'm not worried about Dallas Goedert. You know, Ertz is still the starter there. They've kept him around. Wide receiver is better, but not significantly better. There's still pretty significant question marks at that position. I have no concerns about 29-year-old Ertz. So he's been falling to the fifth and sometimes sixth round. I'm happy to scoop him up. And then a wide receiver, Tyler Lockett. I mean, everybody's on DK Metcalf. He's the next big thing, but Tyler Lockett's the one there. You know, he's the guy. He has been terrific. Even in fantasy, you know, 8 touchdowns, 82 catches last year. He has back-to-back top 16 fantasy campaigns already. And again, he's coming at a discount because of the depth at wide receiver. So like him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now in terms of the tight ends, obviously the tier one tight ends are Travis Kelce and George Kittle, both of whom happened to sign extensions today. Congratulations to those two guys. In terms of the second tier, how big is that for you? Is it just Ertz? I mean, who's in that second tier for you? And you know, are you willing to take those guys kind of interchangeably, or is there a pretty defined group of second tier guys for you, and then you're willing to drop off to another tier?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, this isn't always the case, but tight end's fun this year, right? There's just a level after level after level after level of intriguing upside talent. So, you know, Kelce and Kittle are certainly tier one and tier two. I would still put Kelce on his own tier slightly ahead of Kittle's. But that next tier is three deep, I think. Zach Ertz, Mark Andrews. A lot of people prefer Andrews to Ertz, but it is pretty close. And then Darren Waller, who if I don't take Ertz, I'm happy with around later. So, I think those three guys are in that next tier, and then it's down to guys like your Evan Ingrams and Tyler Higbee, Gronk, Hunter Henry, Jared Cook.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Now, in terms of the running backs, obviously we talked about kind of fading those guys in the third, fourth round. Are you willing to consider them if they fall to round five, or do they need to fall even further for you to start going after, you know, the Le'Veon Bells of the world?
You know, I wouldn't be overly opposed to, you know, guys that we just talked about, you know, like a Bell or maybe a DeAndre Swift that in round five. You know, I could see myself going that direction depending on what else was on the board. Like if the top of my wide receiver board is all gone, which happened in Apex, right? At one point, I think 26 of my top 27 receivers and like all of my top 25 running backs had been picked already, which was just, you never see that happen. So I might consider going that direction. But again, there's just so much value at these other spots that I would love to get a guy like Tyler Lockett, who could easily be a top 10 receiver.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So then you mentioned, of course, with the wide receivers gone, with the running backs gone, in the Apex draft, picking with the final pick of the fifth round, you chose a guy who you mentioned a little later in your piece for ESPN, which was Kyler Murray, a guy who you know, you talk about in round seven as a possible pick. Now, of course, obviously, like I said, the receivers were gone. You're picking up the very last pick of the fifth round. So you're not, it's about a round difference between where you picked him and where you were hoping to get him in round seven. But I mean, where do you see Kyler Murray this year in terms of the quarterback tier after Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, I have been drafting him a lot, and you're exactly right. Had I not taken him here with my, essentially my fifth round pick, it would have been a while before I would have had a shot at him. So it would have been basically the end of round seven. That wasn't going to happen. So, you know, I took him here a little bit early. I was okay doing that because I think that Murray has a shot. He's the only guy, I think, in fantasy that has a shot to be this year's Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, right? And the comparison makes sense, right? I mean, they both were in their second season. They were both super high pedigree. Both, you know, were previously first-round picks. Murray was the first overall pick last season. And oh, by the way, you know, he doesn't have to make quite the leap that Mahomes did or Jackson did, where, you know, Mahomes barely played as a rookie. Jackson added a lot of value with his legs, obviously, but only started half the season and really struggled with efficiency. Well, Kyler Murray's efficiency for a rookie quarterback was pretty good last year, not to mention that he added a ton of value with his legs and was a top eight fantasy quarterback. So we've already seen him deliver the goods. That was before DeAndre Hopkins. You now have your coaching staff going into year two, not to mention Murray going into his year two. There's just so much upside there. So I decided, you know what? I know this group is smart. They're going to all wait a quarterback, which ended up happening aside of Mahomes and Jackson, but I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go for Murray and take a chance that he is one of the fantasy MVPs of 2020. If that's the case, he'll easily pay off of around 5 ADP.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is a league where you have to take some chances. And I think Kyler is a logical place to kind of take a leap and say, okay, this could be a difference maker for me. In the sixth round, we'll finish up here, because obviously your column does get to, you get pretty far. I think how deep do you go in the draft? It looks like 16 rounds.
Oh yeah, we go all the way through from your safe picks at the beginning to your sleepers, kickers, and defenses at the end.
Okay, so you can get to that on ESPN Plus. But let's finish up here with round six, because I want to talk about the tight ends. You mentioned Waller being kind of the fifth tight end, kind of in the third tight end in that second tier for you. Round six for you is T.Y. Hilton or Darren Waller. So, in terms of Waller and the tight end situation, how late are you comfortable going taking your first tight end in a typical draft? Is it around this level? Or are you willing to go even deeper before you start grabbing your tight end one?
You know, it's funny you ask that, because a couple months ago, I thought that my plan at tight end was going to be just ignore it until the end, right? Because I'll mention a couple names here in a second of potential breakout tight ends, and I feel pretty good about them, right? So if you grab two, the odds are pretty good one will break out. Think like last year, Mark Andrews and Darren Waller. You know, those were guys who in shallow leagues, you could pick up off waivers after week one, you know, and at the very minimum, they were late flyers, not to mention a Tyler Higbee, who exploded down the stretch and was one of the fantasy playoff MVP. So, you know, I thought that was the route I was going to go, but there's just been values, right? Zach Ertz, I just talked about, and Darren Waller, I have him on my board here as a round six target. Again, he's going for a lot later than I thought he would this season. He was just terrific last season, no lower than fourth in snaps, routes, targets, receptions, yardage, fantasy points. I mean, the guy was a key component of that offense. And Derek Carr is still the quarterback. He's going to be throwing the ball to Darren Waller, so I like him a lot. But those other names, I mean, you could wait till the double-digit rounds and go after Gronk, Jared Cook, and then the exciting young guys. Noah Fant, who I'm super pumped for. I think he's a shoo-in for a breakout season. Like him a lot. TJ Hockenson, who was, all like Fant, drafted in the first round last season. Hayden Hurst, we mentioned him earlier. He's going to this Atlanta offense. It's going to be you know, pretty committed to getting him the football. Mike Gesicki, a little worried about the Chan Gailey offense, but he's obviously a guy who could potentially make a leap this year. And Chris Herndon, by the way, he's available in high stakes leagues right now in the 14th round. Wow. You know, if you look at yards per target for rookie tight ends over the past decade, it's basically all fantasy superstars. You know, you name a star fantasy tight end, he's on that list. There are two exceptions to that. Noah Fant and Chris Herndon, who missed all of last year, but as a rookie, he was outstanding. So that tells me I want to take a shot on these guys in the later rounds.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're picking 12th in the Apex draft. You took Waller here in the sixth round. If you're willing to wait later, Is it a situation where you might go to the eighth or ninth round and then go tight end at the turn?
Yeah, I could certainly do that later in my draft. In fact, in the Apex draft, in the 10th and 11th round, Sean Siegel, who, again, he's the guy that really has pushed the zero running back concept, went Fanton Hawkinson. So he, you know, he at the turn there. So I kind of love that. I think that's a perfectly viable strategy. Allows you to really attack receiver and running back early, which was all he did in the first nine picks. So I'm perfectly okay with that strategy. But I went a little different direction because I just saw values on the board.
Mm-hmm. One more question for you, Mike, and then we're going to finish up with the Apex draft. Your next three picks, all New York Giants: Darius Slayton in the seventh round, Evan Ingram in the eighth round, and Golden Tate in the ninth round. So less about the Giants here, more about the general idea. How do you feel about stacking players on a team in single season fantasy? Obviously, in daily fantasy football, it's pretty much second nature to stack. How do you feel about that in a sort of single season fantasy league like this one?
I'm okay with it, especially if you're in a, you know, a super competitive league where you need to be a little bolder. And, you know, you don't need to go out of your way to do it early in a round. But, you know, in this sort of format, I'm perfectly fine with it. In fact, I'm coming up here. The draft's not over. I'm a few picks away from picking. I might have to grab Daniel Jones too, right, to stack this together. But I'll say this. Look, if you were to pull fantasy analysts right now around the industry and say, you know, which team, which offenses are kind of underrated right now, you know, undervalued their players as a whole, in fantasy, I'd probably say the Buccaneers would be my answer, but the Giants would be probably the most popular answer, right? There's just so much value with Daniel Jones available late. Obviously, Barkley's going to cost you a lot, but the receivers, Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, and Darius Slayton can all be had with later picks. Evan Ingram comes at a discount. When he has played and been healthy, he's been basically a top five fantasy tight end. So I think that if I can get Slayton at wide receiver 42, Tate at 56 in PPR, Evan Ingram at tight end 7 in the eighth round, it's just they were the best guys on my board. I was happy to take them. And yeah, if the Giants offense goes off, and by the way, they were a borderline top 10 offense in scoring last season, mm-hmm. and that was with all the guys I just mentioned playing zero games together.
Yes.
Zero games together, and they were basically a top 10 offense in scoring. I think they could break out this year. It's very possible if Daniel Jones makes a leap.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, if people want to check out the rest of this column and all your stuff, where can they do that?
Twitter at @MikeLeeNFL, and certainly if you, any of my content, you can get over at ESPN.com, the fantasy section, buried behind Bills content in the NFL section. Once in a while, we get some NFL content in there. And of course, sign up for ESPN Plus. We put a lot in there, put a lot of work into that. And it's not just me there, just some fantastic analysis at ESPN Plus.
And if they want to listen to you, where can they do that?
Yes, the Fantasy Focus podcast. I'll be mixing in. You know, it's Field and Matthew in the studio this year, and then myself and Stefania will be on the pod throughout the year as well. We'll be doing, you know, we'll be firing up Daily Wager soon for some video, of course, on your television. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be an interesting year, but I'm looking forward to getting back to football.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thank you so much.
Yep, always fun, Bill. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks so much again to my guest, ESPN's Mike Clay. Listen to Mike on the Fantasy Focus podcast.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Guys, thanks so much for listening this week. Obviously, two shows, Mina Kimes yesterday, Mike Clay today. Back to one show next week as we continue to preview the NFL season. Hope you guys are staying healthy, enjoying yourselves out there. Hopefully, podcast is entertaining you, but more audio coming next week. So thanks so much for listening.